I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this episode 7 of Overlooked and Undercooked, a critical analysis of Rob Schneider's attempt to shake up the traditional television business model by self-producing, funding, writing, starring in, and directing his semi-autobiographical series, Real Rob. I'm Guy Montgomery.
My name is Tim Batt, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce this episode's guest, British comedian Carl Donnelly.
Hello.
Hey, mate.
World.
How are you?
Yeah, that's right. We're broadcasting to the whole world, baby.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
I was better before I got here.
I see.
You didn't warn me what this podcast was.
Not another naysayer. Do you know what you're walking into?
I didn't know what this new thing
you're working on. You haven't listened to any of the previous episodes?
I haven't listened to the previous episode of this. I know your back catalogue, and I know what your general vibe is, but you just said, do you want to come over and do a podcast?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. And I got here, and you made me go through what we just went through.
A couple of laid-back, chilled-out entertainers.
I thought it would just be a lovely three-way chat. I didn't know we'd have to spend 24 minutes...
What, with a fourth heroic comedian in the form of Rob Schneider. So the episode we just saw was called... Sorry, I got a hair in my mouth. For those of you at home, I'm just taking the hair out. What's My Thing?
Yeah.
And so what we quite like to do, Carl, is get some sort of plot summary from our guests. So could you maybe, for both those of us in the room and those listening along elsewhere... tell us what we just saw.
So, obviously I had to catch up because I've not watched the previous episodes.
It's very important because, you know, this is everything's canon in the world of Real Rob.
Rob's wife she's currently building a strip club for women.
Not for women to perform in, but for
women to go
attend.
And, yeah.
Handsome men.
Yes.
Muscle-bound
very
men.
Very muscly men that she seems to be massaging now and again. And it makes Rob start... Rob's trying to get a sitcom off the ground, but the studio want to change a lot of it. They want to add zombies, apparently. Then he also wants to find something that's really his thing. He decides if he's going to do it for the money, he wants to have a sort of, you know, a project of sort of love.
Yeah.
And he decides that will be a health shop. Because apparently he's really into his health foods and vitamins.
He talks in passing a lot about the idea of GMOs, about organic juices.
Yeah.
You know why he talks about them in passing? Because he's not an intelligent man.
No.
I've come to
realize.
There's
a lot of... he chucks a lot of facts out in the written... In the script, it feels like a lot of it has been... Googled.
Yes.
And for good reason.
Yeah. And then another little side bit is he decides to try and get Ryan Gosling to come to the opening of the strip club. It's going to cost him $300,000 cash. So he goes to the bank, gets $150,000. We'll probably discuss the bank scene, I imagine.
We're led to believe as well that this is no biggie.
What, like 300,000?
Yeah, he bristles at it, but it's no big deal. Getting 300,000.
And that's a recurring motif. He is insecure at the idea of people's perception of how much money he has. He is constantly... He injects talking head style little moments to establish how much money he's worth.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this feels like it's made to... sort of give us an idea of his life, and
that is correct.
You know, the fact that he's even having those meetings about making a sitcom, and everything is him. It feels like this is the life that he thinks he is living.
Can I tell you the ethos which sort of permeated the set for the entirety of production? What Rob Schneider said in an interview with Deadline at the announcement of this show going forward is, "I want to do my own Fawlty Towers."
Ooh.
And so I think in a lot of ways you can see that on the screen, can't you?
Is it in that there's only ever like a very small number of episodes, mate?
I think more than that.
It's not even true. There's 16
of
these.
Is it 16 Fawlty Towers?
There's
12 Fawlty Towers. But I think
he's already gone beyond Fawlty Towers.
So not even in that detail is it like Fawlty Towers.
The detail, the way in which it is like Fawlty Towers is that the operation, not the show itself, but the surrounding framework of the creation of the show was run with the same level of incompetence as Fawlty Towers and Torquay.
And also, with Fawlty Towers, in hindsight, some of it doesn't stand the test of time, I don't think.
By and large,
doesn't stand the test of time
now.
Of 1 second after watching the bits.
That's right.
This was made in 2015. And I think as a testament to how big of a swing and a miss this was, this is 7 episodes now, so we've seen a lot of supporting talent being given various different levels of opportunity to shine comedically with the script that they have been dealt. And not one member of the supporting talent, first of all, they're not recognizable, which is insane, because this is like 3 years ago now, and so you'd think he'd hit on one. So they're all Rob Schneider level talent, which is either that he's a terrible forecaster of what will become...
So are you saying like all of the bit part people are kind of comedy people, but they never took off afterwards?
No one's blown up off the back of it.
Gotcha. He must have been casting comic actors for these roles, right? So either he's got a terrible eye for talent, or he's a personality who everyone bristles at the idea of working with.
Yeah. Or he's only used good friends and family, and
that is
they're all
straight
just
out of the Happy Medicine
bad actors.
Production values.
I didn't realize this was 2015, because it does have that whiff of like a sitcom made just before the Me Too type, you know, the fall of Rome. This feels like it was made during.
I don't know. I can't imagine Rob Schneider adjusting his behavior for any sort of cause or ideology or broader understanding of how the world works.
That said, though, like in particular, there's a scene that Jamie, his assistant, has in this ep, which is it's like, oh, this is at the lower end of the scale of exactly what Harvey Weinstein did.
There's a couple. There's the one with the agent.
Grisly blowjob happening during a phone call where an agent... It's to no comic effect.
To no payoff.
The scene felt... It finished. It didn't need a punchline.
At all.
The pullback and reveal was the agent was getting a blowjob. That was the gag,
and then
I think.
He was mean to the woman.
And then in the at the vitamin shop, when he's discovering his thing is to maybe peddle vitamins, he is talking to a lady because there's a sort of, you know, obstinate employee, and he says to the lady, he tries and gives her help, and then she says, "You're really creepy," and she walks away, and you watch his eyeline follow her ass, and then he says, "Nice ass," to a woman he's just established. Well, he doesn't know, thinks he's a creep, and is pregnant.
Yes. And all he's done is give her advice about buying organic apples.
And then again, before we get to the scene that you're describing with the assistant, which you were saying we're going to get back to in the bank.
Oh, God.
They thrust an orgasm against one of the supporting members.
Carl, take us through the beats of that moment,
Actually, because you said there's a scene at the end you didn't see coming. I didn't see the orgasm scene coming.
Right.
I could not have predicted.
I did.
Did you?
No.
Well, not like a mile away, but it was like as soon as we started to go down that path, it was like,
right.
Okay.
So he basically explains through some bad writing that the money he's withdrawing from the bank is to give to Ryan Gosling. She says, "You know Ryan Gosling." He says, "Yes." And then she has a full-blown... hands-free orgasm.
Yeah.
Just at the mere mention of Ryan Gosling's
name.
Well,
I mean, when you get to Rob's age and sort of understanding of the ways of the world and the ways of the fear of sex...
He knows woman.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that. The
he
man
knows
understands woman.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of them scenes that it's like, hey, if you're going to... any sort of scene like that is just going to... Somebody's going to say, "Have you not seen When Harry Met Sally?"
Yeah.
But then to take the Annie... you know, of the actual interesting part of that scene and just make it about a woman is so has so little self-control that she's going to hear the name of Ryan Gosling, picture.
How can she know enough to be a fan of Ryan Gosling if at the very mention of him she has an earth-shattering orgasm? How can you watch a movie with Ryan Gosling in it? How can you see a picture of Ryan Gosling?
The funny thing is, as well, in Harry Met Sally, which is a film that came out over 30 years ago or so, the whole joke of that is that women are faking it you know, the pleasure of men, essentially. That they are so good at manipulating men that they can put on this act and they're utterly convincing. And Rob has taken like the surface level bit of that, which is women have loud orgasms at the drop of a hat, and missed the entire rest of the context of what that moment is about.
Yeah. And also, you know, she's in a customer service role.
Yeah.
Let's not lose the fact that As if she would how poorly allow you, that herself.
How poorly do you feel for this actor? They get an audition. God. They say, what's it for? Rob Schneider's self-funding a sitcom. Oh, my God. I'll look at the scripts.
Yeah, well,
but that's all I'm telling you I do. I'll look at the scripts.
I'm sleeping in my car at the moment, so I guess this was modern-day servitude in Hollywood.
Carl, also, can we quickly just point out how quickly she got the cash for that? Like he takes out $150,000 cash.
And just to get into that as well, he says, I need to get a cashier's check to cash immediately. That's just a withdrawal. You don't need to get a check if you're turning it into cash immediately.
There is a weird little bit of info he gives where he says he wants a cashier's check, I think, because he then thinks he might
be able to write it off as a tax write-off.
Oh, right. Okay, gotcha. So
it's good for him just to throw that bit of information.
Yeah,
that bit of information, I think, is so he can say the name Ryan Gosling. I think he's put all that dumb information in so he can cause her to have an orgasm.
You can do that with a withdrawal. You can put it, if it's your account.
You could say, I want $150,000.
And put a note
it's
on
for
the account.
Ryan Gosling.
Put a note on the account with the withdrawal that says Ryan Gosling. Because that's what he's saying with the cashier's check.
Yes, it is, yeah.
It's the same fucking. Sorry, but.
No, it's a very entertaining thing by which to be frustrated.
In amongst everything it's else, it's like, at a minimum, my guy.
Yeah.
Can we just get the basics of how you get money out of a bank account?
But then she gets the money out just from the, like, about 1 foot away from her to the right behind a screen. $150,000 cash.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how American banks work, but
not
even out of a drawer. That's coming out of a safe.
You list celebrities' names until the cashier has an orgasm and then they reach 30 centimeters to their right and they give you $150,000. Carl, I'd like to quote you to you. This was about 1 minute into the show. This is bad, isn't it?
That was a gut reaction.
Yeah.
And then we sat through the rest of the thing and it never changed. I mean, do you know what it felt? It felt like a first draft. Yeah, you know I mean, that's what it felt like.
Well, if the three people in the room are the three stars of the show.
Well, one's his wife, one is him, and one is
Patricia. Background.
She's Mexican. She does not have a background as a performer. Right, this is her sort of debut on screen. She's no background as a writer, but she is writing and performing in this show.
She was a producer though, right?
She was a producer in Mexico,
Television.
Okay. So she's got some background. She should know what she's doing.
Yeah. I think she says she's 29.
Well, like she...
In this.
She knows what she's doing in the same way if we go and watch a game of football... We could run out on the pitch and play with professional footballers.
And technically do it all in the right way.
She holds her own in the scenes against Rob.
Well, weirdly, I don't think she's... I think her acting-wise is one of the stronger
group.
Well, the assistant, in terms of acting, is where only, I think it really falls down. He's absolutely... He sort of looks like he's trying to act like a bad Ben Stiller character.
Yeah, I could see that.
She's the only person with one, you know, iota of charisma. Like, the only person who it's possible, even through... Her character is not, by any means, a good character, like, in terms of as a person.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
She's got the same mean spirit that Rob does. It just manifests differently.
I don't think she's nice. I think she's the nicest of the bunch.
Yeah.
She's got, like, a lot of maternal instincts that come out during the show and
stuff.
She
tolerates the worst... She's an enabler.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
But that's colour. I think her core personality is good.
Well, it's easy to warm to her because of this. I mean, we're all on the same page here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to warm to somebody who's married to the world's biggest arsehole.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in real... I don't know what he's like in real life, but his character in this is an abomination.
Not a million
of a
miles away.
he's horrible. Yeah. Although, weirdly, I said something. I think you were in the bathroom. I said that his acting style in this, I don't know if that's how... He tries to play it quite straight, but it feels like he's trying to act like Michael Keaton in the sort of... You know, Michael Keaton's gone through this revolution in the last 5 years and become... like. It feels like he's watched Michael Keaton's renaissance and gone, I'm going to act exactly like Michael Keaton.
And he's doing his darndest.
Yeah, even dresses like him.
Did you enjoy Birdman?
I did enjoy Birdman.
I love Birdman. Yeah. I love a bit of drumming though. So
weirdly, I watched it the same week as Whiplash.
Oh,
and that's a weird two films to watch in the same week because obviously I watched Birdman, loved it, and obviously it's got that real jazz undercurrent to
the whole thing.
But then I watched Whiplash and was like, oh, I actually prefer this. It's a more simple film
I watched
jazz.
Them in the same. We also saw Juice Bigelow European Gigolo that week. Yes. And I thought of the three,
it was
that was the one that really jumped out. Because what we have here as a man unafraid to explore different cultures.
Yes.
Different ways of life, and all, you know, encased in a sort of a well-structured and written comedy.
Can I ask you a question, Guy? How are you faring? Because we've watched 5 episodes of this today.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you going? How's the mental health?
It's actually fine. Having different people come in and all of their reaction is to like, they sort of buck up against, you know, like everyone kind of has been quite... Shaken's not necessarily
they
right.
They get taken off guard.
I'm shaken.
But I feel like I've been holding pretty steady, be completely honest.
You don't, both of you, I mean, yeah, I think Tim is, you seem to be struggling more with it.
Yep.
Like you were getting angry during. Furious. Guy was actually very restrained.
I think Tim's stoic. Sort of coming in and out of his sensibility. I don't know.
Guy's got a good ability to, if something's really pissing him off, just sort of switch off to it.
Well, he did at one point just go and put some cups away. Yeah. So I think there are some undercurrents going on.
No, I had to put the cups away. I got to leave after this recording.
We've
you know?
All got our coping mechanisms. Yeah. You know, I'm railing against it because I... full-heartedly still believe somewhere in me that it will change if I can express my anger to it.
How many episodes are left?
One in the first season.
So it's 8 episodes.
Mm. 8 episodes a season.
Based on, so with the Netflix thing, because obviously it just kicks into the new episode, we've got the still frame from the first frame of the next episode where Guy quickly pressed pause before it kicked off. And I think we're going to get treated to this sitcom that he keeps talking about as the final episode.
Certainly, we've got something to look forward to. The title of the 8th episode is Opening Night, which would suggest we are about to watch Rob's version of comedy within Rob's version of comedy.
Or also the opening night of the strip club.
Oh, of course. Yes.
And we get to see if...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Gosling makes an appearance. You
know, he absolutely doesn't.
It is so telling that we needed you to relay to us, the people who've watched 7 episodes, that's what's going to happen. Because the number of plot ideas or threads that these people open up and do not pursue...
Yeah.
Hey, Carl, do you want to take a bet? Sorry, do you want to take a bet as to whether or not Gosling will turn up?
I mean,
and let's do the odds. I will make a bet with you. Say like 8-1 odds.
That
okay,
he
eight,
does.
Eight in favor that he will not be there. So if you want to take the bet that he's going to appear, I will pay you 8 times the money.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, that's it's a tempting bet, but I know he cannot physically be in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosling, 8-1 odds.
One thing Gosling has is, you know, some level of quality control in the script it works.
But he's in Hollywood.
Put $5 down, man.
Maybe, and the weird thing is, you never know, they might be old friends.
So unlikely.
Put $5 down. You get $40
out
of this.
I'll put $5 in.
If the universe implodes and Gosling turns up, I give you $40, but you've got to give me $5.
I will take that bet.
Fabulous.
There is no way Ryan Gosling is going to show up in
All right, here's another good... who do you think he's going to get? Because I feel like I can get in his mind.
Nice.
If Gosling isn't going to make it, I think he's going to go for a replacement that will be bad.
Sandler.
No, it's going to be... It's a plot device I've already used. It's going to be a...
Oh, okay. They're not going to go... Yeah, not this skillful show. They're not going to reuse a joke or a format.
No, I'm saying they're not... Doing Sandler would be more original than what they're going to do, which is going to be... He's going to try and palm it off the same way he did with the bear. He's going to get some like... He's
just put Jamie in a latex suit.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lookalike.
Or like some sort of person he finds on the street.
No, I like this idea that he'll get an impersonator.
He'll get a Ryan Gosling impersonator. Because obviously there was the money sort of issue at the end of that.
Yeah.
Is that like,
oh, yeah, sorry, take us through that, Carl. What happened there?
So obviously he gets $150,000. He puts it in a special... I thought he just put it in a bag. It looked like a handbag. It turns out he's put a...
An anti-theft
like ink cartridge... He gives it to his assistant and says, don't open that. His assistant then essentially tries to sexually assault a woman in his room.
Yeah.
And when she tries to leave, he wants to give her money for a taxi. Opens it. It explodes in his face. He's now ruined $150,000.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, now he physically cannot afford Gosling. So now we've actually... Gosling's obviously not going to be there. I've talked myself out of my bet. I've burnt $5 there.
But the thing is that you're operating in a world where, like... the TV show follows a logical one event after the other, and there's consequence. And in this show, there isn't. So the episode ended so confusingly.
Oh, it's mental.
We get the exploded $150,000 that Jamie's opened and ruined the money, and then it just ends.
That's it.
Hard cut to credits. And I was like, what the fuck? And then the opening, we can see the opening frame of the next episode, and it looks like it's opening onto the sitcom. So I don't think it's going to get addressed. I think it's just like, well, that episode's world, you know, it briefly existed.
It can't be right.
Time will tell. Carl, do you think that we're punching up?
By watching this show,
the podcast itself.
Well, I think there's so much wrong with it that I think, you know, he is a successful Hollywood. You know, he's been around. He
knows
what
he's
doing.
How do you define success?
Well, he's still working. He's obviously got enough money to self fund this.
He's paying himself. Is that still working?
Yeah, that's how economies work nowadays. Money's not real, is it? It's created and then pumped back in. So I think, I mean, he has had if you were a jobbing actor, you would say he's had a very successful career.
Yeah.
He's put this out. I think you are allowed to critique it, and I think there are moral issues of what he's doing
that
allow this
ones.
To be critiqued in quite a harsh manner.
Countless. No, you know, none more so than the fact that they place a Deuce Bigalow male gigolo poster at the bedhead of his assistant's apartment.
Yeah,
that is crazy
stuff. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's all this. There's so much wrong with this. I think I don't think you can be accused of punching down on Schneider.
I appreciate that, Carl. You've made me feel better about the situation because I think you're right. Sometimes a moral wrong rises to the level where it's like we actually do need to talk about this.
I think so. I think this is
didn't want this to just be us shitting on a show, and that's why we
you
don't
did
wanna,
or you didn't
did not
you have at turns shit
no
all over
yeah,
this show.
But what I've tried to do so hard is to not colour anything, because each episode we have a new guest and we don't you know really brief them on
not at all
anything.
I do nothing,
so you just come in and you get a take, and if there was one episode that was great that's what we would talk about, but it hasn't
on about
happened.
The third moment in the show where it sort of it felt like when they were writing it they'd never met a woman before. That was when I think I said to you, is it always like this? Is this something that
it is
a rare, and when you told me it is, I think that's when you realize that this is open
nearly
for,
always
it's open season on criticizing this.
What do you think of the stand-up interstitials?
Well, I've said, weirdly, he looked so unhappy while he was doing it. There was a real sadness
to him.
Because
he's performing to no one.
No.
Yeah, but even then, he's acting the rest of the show. Just give it a little bit of salt and pepper on the performance.
He did have a cutaway to audience this time, because
Were they there? That could have just
It's impossible
been.
To
well,
know.
Well, it's true. It's a good point.
It took 6 or 7 episodes for him to figure out that people are going to get suspicious unless you have sort of silhouettes of heads in some sort of frame.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... And what's weird is he does an impression of his wife in the routine, but we've just met his wife the whole show, and it's not how she talks.
Exactly.
So there's so many... There's weird little decision-making things that have happened in this that...
And it would sort of like... You could get away with that if you did the stand-up bit first. Yep. It wouldn't be good.
No.
Because you'd be proven wrong immediately. But you could enjoy the joke at the time... when he's doing it on stage with this impersonation of his Mexican wife, and then we meet her after that point, and it's like, oh, okay, he's dialing her up.
Yeah,
but to meet her first and then get the impersonation, which is the time he does it, you know, straight off the bat. The opening frame of the series is a conversation between the two of them.
So
you've removed your ability to do an impersonation of someone we've met when you're not adding anything to it's just
it's
a bad,
so bizarre.
Racist Mexican
and
voice.
The little pieces to camera, them cutaways, they...
Like, you like those?
I hate them.
Yeah, I thought you'd like those.
It's like, it's such a shit plot device. It's such a clear plot device of him going like, I didn't know how to move between these two scenes.
None of the techniques serve their purpose though. None of them actually serve, you know, they don't move anything forward. They don't draw any lines between anything. They're just all sort of there. But I got to say, credit to the man. He did it, didn't he?
What, for making it?
Well, yeah.
Oh, no,
how many shows have you, you know, self-funded, written, produced, started, and directed?
I agree. You can't fault his work ethic.
No.
You can fault his ethics.
I think I could fault his work ethic. Because you said, I can't remember if this is when the mics were on
first
or not.
Draft.
It feels like a draft.
The script feels like a first draft.
And I think that's
and I'm
what,
saying that as somebody who's never written a script. So, I mean, if I'm saying that, it's bad.
That's what happens when you insulate yourself from any critique, which he's done by constructing a writer's room of himself, his wife, and Jamie, who I presume they have a similar dynamic off screen where he is his boss.
Yes.
If not in a direct sense that he's paying his rent, in a kind of professional career sense he's riding the Rob train.
What would you say to Rob Schneider if you could talk with him right now?
I wouldn't give him advice. I have no one to give advice, but I'd have a lot of questions about.
What do you want to ask him?
To know how he feels about this now after the last sort of year, 18 months of the Me Too movement. I think like people in, especially in his world, Hollywood, having to have a little look at themselves and see about behaviour. Would that make him look back at some of the choices he made professionally?
I think you overestimate this guy's consciousness. I think he looks back on this, he reflects on it purely in comedic terms, and I think he's misguided enough to think that it's been a success.
Well,
is he? Why? What's the? I don't know anything.
Well, he
about.
Did another season, didn't he? Season two.
But did it get? So it's on Netflix.
Both seasons.
So it must have some fans.
I've got a theory. He paid Netflix to put it on.
Is that a thing you can do?
I think that he just.
That can't be real.
I think he sold it back to Netflix for 50 cents on the dollar.
You reckon?
He
lost money making it, but he's still
he
got
was
a
trying to recoup a little bit of the loss of production. I think that's quite possible. Truly.
When did the second season come out?
Last year, must have been
2017. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you haven't got onto that yet.
Well, no, we're doing it consecutively, aren't we? Out of respect for the craft.
It'll be interesting to see what that's saying. You know, I mean, I'm now probably gonna.
Are you gonna cane through this? Are you gonna have a watch?
No. I mean, I don't want.
There's no world in which you're.
I'm probably
gonna
have to watch the final episode of this series, just to get the Gosling.
I'm juiced. I am real juiced to watch the final episode, not because of the bet, but just to watch it. The bet a little bit though, because I'm a gambler. I love a gamble.
Yeah, I'd like to hear his proper thoughts on it. Is there any interviews online or any?
Not that we've dug up. I think that feels more like a retrospective to me.
It strikes me as somebody who's got a blog.
I think he reads a lot of them. I don't know if he writes any. I couldn't do it. I couldn't watch any press junket interviews for this because it'll make me feel really sad about what we're doing, I think.
Nah, it's all good,
man. Because he'll say stuff like, this is what he was saying. I'm really proud of this. You know, this is really me putting my life out there and what I really think about the world and my worldview and my experiences being someone who's experienced, you know, a lot of success in their life professionally. This is kind of the foibles that people might not be aware of my life. And it's like, I don't want to be critiquing something that is so close to your heart.
Or it might all be a big joke. It might be a very self-conscious,
Carl,
controlled,
Carl Donnelly,
measured thing.
Look in my eyes.
I know.
What are the odds on that?
I mean, the odds are slim.
What bet would it take?
I mean, the odds are worse than Gosling showing up in the last episode, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
Tommy Wiseau claims that his was like kind of a satirical work of comedy.
I mean, yeah, obviously we don't.
Rob Schneider could
it.
Claim the same.
Exactly.
I am on the Real Rob Twitter stream.
How many followers has that got, Guy?
Guess.
I reckon he's got loads.
6,000.
The real him, the real person.
The Real Rob, the TV show.
Just the show.
Oh, the show. Oh, that's probably not got much. 18,000.
3,812.
That is low. That is really low.
For a show.
I'm just checking out.
Has he got one? Has he got a personal?
What's the behind the scenes of our shoot? There is a behind the scenes here.
Oh my God.
This is
something to look forward to.
Well, we'll watch
two
that.
Two retweets, 9 favourites.
Oh.
Brutal. Oh, who retweeted it as well? That's always a fun thing to look into for promo content.
Yeah, it's fucking
It'll great. Be like him and his agent.
He can't have a... Surely...
It's the Real Rob Twitter account and Nicole Partis, who appears to work in PR.
Yeah.
Has Rob got a personal Twitter account?
He does, and he's got like 700. He's got 712,000 followers. Norm Macdonald,
did he not even retweet it then?
No, probably not. As we spoke about in a previous tweet, wrote this. This is to suggest that Rob Schneider has done Norm Macdonald a huge favor at some point in his life. My friend Rob Schneider, one of the few comedy auteurs we have, has created the hysterical Real Rob.
Ooh,
and season 2 is now streaming on Netflix. Couldn't recommend anything more.
Oh.
That's a friend's message, though, isn't it?
Friends don't let friends make real Rob.
He has nailed himself.
But yeah, you
to the
can't stop a
there.
Friend making a thing. Yeah, Rob. Yeah, they do Saturday Night Live together? Yeah. They go way back.
But Norm doesn't have to be quite so effusive in his praise for this steaming pile of shit.
I know, but I think Norm likes winding people up.
Oh, do you know what? I think you're right.
Like
he
would never like praise something that was like widely loved.
You're right.
He's much more likely to think of a friend who might be doing a show that's getting a bit slammed, and he'd do that just for a
wink and a nod.
Absolutely.
Because I actually think he did that in his appearance as well. What does he say? He says, oh, okay. So in his cameo in the second episode, he says to Rob, he's like, hey, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming here and talking to me. And I fully read it as, this is what you should be saying to me right now for being in this show.
That's definitely, there's a bit of an in-joke there.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what it was because of in the episode? Because Rob read on a blog that vasectomies give you dementia.
Right.
And Norm Macdonald had a vasectomy.
Okay.
And so simultaneously, while denigrating Rob on his own show, he was also showing the signs of dementia as a comic vehicle.
But then he made his assistant Jamie get a vasectomy so he could have a human experiment that he could watch.
And after that, the storyline was never picked up or addressed ever again. We're just about done for time here, but Carl, is there anything you would like to plug while we've got you?
Plug?
We do not know when this will be released.
I suppose just one of my podcasts. I do one called the Carl and Chris podcast. I do one called Babysitting Trevor, which has just been nominated for Best Comedy Podcast at the British Comedy.
Congratulations.
The British Podcast Awards. And that is, it's a weird one. It's me and Chris Martin and a very Australian man called Trevor Crook. We're trying to get Trevor to become a modern man because he's
the most old-fashioned guy.
Yeah.
This Trevor's a real bloody card.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. But like, he's good when we're working with him and keeping him busy. But the moment we have a little break in between seasons, he just disappears into his cave and just comments on things online. It's us trying to stop him from going mad.
This sounds great.
It's really fun. Like, we made him do yoga, and we try and make him do things to help his. He's got chronic OCD and some anxiety issues.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there is a nice tone to it, but it's also very funny because he's also a bit of a old filth bag.
And that is called Babysitting Trevor. Yes. Thank you so much.
Babysitting Trev.
It's called Babysitting Trevor. But online, I think it's sort of all our Twitter and that are called Babysitting Trevor.
Tim, anything else to say?
Guys, it's been such a pleasure and a joy because I don't have to watch any more of this right in this instant. So, Carl, thank you so much for joining us. Carl Donnelly, world's funniest man.
I'll
put it on record.
I would like to leave this episode with a quote from Rob Schneider, actually, from within the episode. He says, I like cutting in front of people in restaurants when they've been waiting in line a long time because I'm famous and they're not.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.